Hi folks, welcome to today's Coffee and Colossians. This is the last one we're doing on Colossians 2 verse 8. We have been looking at the false philosophies that occur in this world. See to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the elemental spiritual forces of this world, rather than on Christ. Now it's interesting, isn't it, that if I were to have a picture on my wall of Hitler, or if I was to say that I was a fascist, there'd be just, rightly I think, real horror. But if I have a picture of Che Guevara, as I used to have, or Lenin, or Mao Zedong, or maybe even Stalin, that's okay. When I walk to my office here, there are posters on lampposts and on walls from students and lecturers at this University of Sydney talking about Marxism today and a rally for Marxism and so on. If there were swastikas up, it would be considered a hate crime. And yet communism killed far more than fascism. Not even remotely to say that fascism was anything other than evil. But it's strange how in some circles it's acceptable to be communist. I think of a BBC commentator I know who describes herself as a luxury communist. And others who think that, I mean, I remember at Labour Party conferences we used to sing the red flag, keep the red flag flying here. It's kind of seen as a sort of heroic thing. Well, what is communism and what's the biblical answer to it? The definition is a theory or system of social organization in which all property is owned by the community and each person contributes and receives according to their ability and needs, which sounds great. I read the Communist Manifesto when I was a teenager. I was a communist. Later on, I read Das Kapital by Marx and Engels. And I found, in some ways, it was kind of convincing, but it's what's called dialectical materialism. It's naturalism. That is, there's nothing supernatural. We saw that, for example, logical positivism kind of arguing that. And it's atheistic. It was the fact that communism was fundamentally atheistic that really quite surprised me when I got into looking at it and studying it a bit more. So what's wrong with communism? Well, at the end of this, I'm going to put a 9-minute clip from Jordan Peterson. I won't put it in the middle. I'll put it at the end for you to have a look at, which I would highly recommend, in which he explains some of the 100 million plus deaths that communism caused in the 20th century. Now, in the 21st century, communism is back in favor amongst the elites. You can now be a millionaire or a billionaire and say you're a communist, which is just bizarre. But that's because we are now talking about a different kind of Marxism, institutional Marxism, the march through the cultural Marxism. Some people deny that this exists. I would suggest that you read Melvin Tinker's That Hideous Strength to grasp and see what this is about. I think it's really important. I think cultural Marxism has gone through particularly the elite institutions in the United States, in the United Kingdom, and to some degree, maybe a lesser degree, here also in Australia. And it's devastating. It's absolutely devastating. One of the things, if you want to look at in terms of the impact of communism from a Christian point of view, read Living Fields, Killing Fields by Don Cormack, a profoundly moving book. I had the last ounce of my communism thrown out for me when I came across somebody from Cambodia, who had gone through that whole regime, and I realized what absolute evil it was. So, what's wrong with communism? Well, it just doesn't take into account human nature. See, I think the principle of sharing things in common, communitarian property, is actually not a bad one. In fact, Marx, from each according to his means to each according to his needs, I think, took that out of Paul's second letter to the Corinthians, chapter 8, where he's talking about giving. And amongst other things, he says, our desire is not that others might be relieved while you are hard pressed, but that there might be equality. At the present time, your plenty will supply what they need, so that in turn their plenty will supply what you need. The goal is equality. As it is written, the one who gathered much did not have too much, and the one who gathered little did not have too little. Some have argued that the early Christian church, particularly in Acts 2, was communist in that they had everything in common. It's certainly not communist in the Marx sense, the Stalinist sense, the Leninist sense. But I do think that Christianity's attitudes towards material things, the concept of fellowship, the concept of sharing, is the answer to communism. If you are drawn in by cultural Marxism, the whole language and the virtue signaling and everything that goes along with that, you will be enslaved. That's what Paul is saying. If you follow Christ, you will hang loose to the things of this world. You will share what goods you have. You will care for your brothers and sisters in material ways. To some extent, the Christian church is communist. You know, it's very interesting. I'll tell you one story, then I will go. I remember a lady from China, a student who came to our church in Dundee, and she told me that her parents were leaders of the Communist Party in a major Chinese city. I don't think I'll say anything more than that. And I said, why do you come to church? And she said, because the church is the nearest thing I can find to the Communist Party. I think I took that as a compliment. I think she meant community. I think she meant leadership and teaching and everything else. But the big difference is communists just have flawed, failed human leaders. The head of the church is Christ, and we follow his teaching. We don't kill for him, but we would die for him. So tomorrow, I hope that we will go on to look at verse 9. But God bless you till then. And as I said, I will leave you with this clip of Jordan Peterson explaining how Nietzsche foresaw communism and Dostoevsky, and what its impact was to be, in case you had any doubt. Enjoy this, and God bless you. Bye.
Now, Nietzsche said back in the late 1800s that after he said that God was dead, and I suppose that would also mean the theory that of suffering that I outlined at the beginning, that is at the basis of Judeo-Christian civilization, that God was dead and that people had killed him and that we'd never find enough water to wash away the blood. It's a paraphrase, but I've got the basic message right. And he also said there'll be two consequences of that. Nihilism, because there's no transcendent meaning, and a move to totalitarianism because people can't tolerate nihilism. And he said the most likely pathway to totalitarianism would be communism, essentially. He didn't quite use those words, but he meant that. The words are close enough. He said socialism, but I'm going to use communism to distinguish it from democratic socialism. And he said that probably tens of millions of people would die in the 20th century as we played out that experiment. And then he said, but it might be worth it if we learn something from it. Rough, man. I mean, and unbelievable. Like, I cannot figure out how in the world he knew that that was going to happen, especially so far in advance. But Dostoevsky knew the same thing. He wrote this book called The Devils, or The Possessed. You could read that. That's a great book. It takes about 150 pages to get going. But once everything snaps together after that, you know, and then it moves. And it's basically his prophecy about, it's an examination of the kind of person who had arisen in the aftermath of the death of God in Russia, who would lead the communist revolution. That's essentially it. It's brilliant. It's terrifying. And it's a great intro to Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago, which describes what did happen when those sort of people took over the revolution. So let's look at what happened after the revolution. And we might say, well, how about we replicate the experiment a few times? Because you know how it is. If you're running a scientific experiment, you want to find out what something does if you allow it to behave. You don't want to just run it once because, well, maybe there was something specific about those conditions that led to the outcome. You want to generalize it across multiple circumstances. So we might say, well, let's take this set of ideas and let's run it on large scale over a very long period of time in a variety of exceptionally diverse cultures and languages. So let's do that. Okay, well, we could first start with the Soviets. People, even now, because it's like the 100th anniversary of the Russian Revolution, are celebrating Lenin. It's like, that's not good. That's like celebrating Hitler. Okay, I'm dead serious about that. It's not good. And the fact that people can dare to think that that's okay means that there's something wrong with the way that we look at history. Lenin was a monster. And if you want to know about that, you can read Solzhenitsyn's writings about Lenin. Because the communist apologists say, well, it wasn't Lenin. Lenin was a good guy. He was all motivated by love of the working class. It's like, well, his henchman was Stalin. And if your henchman is Stalin, you're not a good guy. And Lenin was around during the early collectivization. And if you read what he wrote, you'll find out that he is perfectly willing to have any number of people die as long as his ideological system could be brought into being. So there's no celebrating Lenin. There's no we're cool, young, Marxist, hip revolutionaries, and he's our idol. It's like, there's none of that. Not if you know anything. Not if you're decent. Well, there was the death of the kulaks, I told you about that. There was the Ukrainian famine, that's 6 million gone there. There was the rise of the Gulag state, because it turned out that Russia, the Soviet Union, couldn't run on the principles that it had laid down as sacrosanct. They just didn't work, so you had to enslave everybody and run your economy as a slave state, essentially. And try not to kill the people in the gulags so fast that you can't suck some productive labor out of them. There's the death of tens of millions of people. We don't even know. The estimates range from 15 to 60 million. And like, we won't get too picky about the numbers, because after the first 10 million, you kind of made your point. And the fact that we don't know between 15 and 60 is actually an indication of the horror of it. Because our count is off by tens of millions. And that's only within the last century. And then there was the 1956 crackdown on Hungary and the 1968 invasion of Czechoslovakia. Then there was the whole like thermonuclear Holocaust thing that was going on at the same time. And the fact that in 1962 and in 1984, we were seconds away from complete annihilation, right? During the Cuban Missile Crisis, the keys were in the intercontinental ballistic missile release systems, and Castro, as he admitted to Jimmy Carter, in case any of you are Castro fans, which you shouldn't be, that he was perfectly willing to have Cuba annihilated if it would have meant the defeat of the United States. And then in 1984, approximately, I may have the date exactly wrong, the Russians received an indication from their early warning systems that the Americans had launched 5 thermonuclear missiles, and one Russian decided that it was a mistake and refused to launch the retaliation. And he just died about 2 weeks ago. So, you know, that was pretty close. And so that was experiment number one, let's say. That wasn't good, that experiment. Let's put it that way. It wasn't good. It was exactly the antithesis of good. It was precisely the antithesis of good. But that wasn't all. I mean, there's the People's Republic of China. That's a different country. Like, seriously, a different country, right? Different tradition, different language. How many people died in China under Mao? No one knows. Same issue with the Soviet Union, although Mao was a bigger monster than Stalin, and that's impressive, you know, because there's Hitler, there's Stalin, and there's Mao. And of the three, Mao was probably the worst. He's still revered in China. Maybe that accounts for their affinity for North Korea, which could still destroy us all, the remnants of that horrible state. Maybe 100 million people died in China during the Great Leap Forward. That's a hell of a leap forward. Well, maybe it wasn't 100 million, you know, maybe it was only 40 million. But as I said before, when you're counting in the tens of millions, your point's already made. And then there was Cambodia and the killing fields and Bulgaria and East Germany and Romania and the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, that's North Korea, and Vietnam and Ethiopia, Hungary, etc., etc., etc. There was never a successful communist state. Cuba, I suppose, came closest, but it was radically... the Soviets poured money into Cuba, so that doesn't really count. So then the first question was, well, are these Marxists motivated by love or hatred? Well, is it love or hatred that produces 100 million dead people? And is that enough evidence or not? And if it's not enough evidence, if you think to yourself, well, that's not enough evidence, it was never really given its proper, a proper try. It's like, well, what would have been a proper try? See, I always think when I hear someone say that, I know what you think. You think in your delusional arrogance that you understand the Marxist doctrines better than anyone else ever has, and that if you were the one implementing those doctrines, you would have ushered in the utopia. That's what you mean when you say that. And, you know, they say, and there's an idea in the New Testament that there's a sin, it's the sin against the Holy Ghost. If you commit that sin, no one really knows what it is, that you can't be forgiven. And I would say, well, if you want a candidate for the sin against the Holy Ghost in the 21st century, the statement, communism, real communism was never tried, with the underlying idea that if you had been the person implementing it, it would have worked, I think that's a pretty good contender for something for which you should never be forgiven.